Integrity. That's called courage.
Free up your mind. Use your imagination.
All you need to know is I'll get you there.
Learning.
Now that's the stuff leaders should be made of.
Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Our guests are our students. Opinionated, daring, and ridiculously smart. They ask tough questions about life and about learning. This podcast is by them and for them.
Thank you, Alex and Isha, for joining me for the second episode of the Open House Podcast. We are so excited to have the both of you here. Before we really go into it, I just want to take us back to September 2018, which was really a watershed moment for the LGBTQI community in India. Scenes and pictures from that day are really etched in everyone's memory. But while it was a really big step forward, a law only changes so much. It doesn't erase the everyday experience of someone who identifies as part of the community. And that experience isn't always pleasant. There's a lot to talk about under that umbrella, but today's podcast is about one of those experiences, which is coming out to your friends and family. Before we deep dive into that question, I want to just take a moment to introduce the both of you. Isha is in class 12 at Greenwood High School in Bangalore. She hopes to pursue English or sociology, or perhaps both in college. Alex Matthew identifies as a cis queer man and has been performing as a drag artist for 7 years. At 32, he has experience of how you navigate a workplace as a queer individual. And he's also seen the LGBTQI movement take a new shape and form. So we're hoping he brings that perspective to this conversation. I want to open up the floor for questions. When you are thinking about coming out, what is it that's going through your mind and your heart? Either of you can start.
Because I think I came out before Isha, so I'll start. So I knew that I was different. I knew I was not the same. Like how a lot of people, I don't generally, go in terms with normal and abnormal. So I always say unique and, common. So that is the words I use. So I feel I am unique. I started questioning the society. Why are people getting married? And why are they producing babies as if they are, a machine? All of that. But in a society where patriarchal is the mindset, I had to deal or battle with it on a day-to-day basis, like from school, my classmates used to say, "Well, you walk like a lady." College, the same thing. MBA, all about, "Oh, you're too expressive. You show your hands a lot." To workplace where they don't understand who you are, or they didn't have a proper environment for queer people. To a point where I was like, "Hey, you know what? I am an artist at heart and taking steps accordingly." It was way back in 2013-14 that I think, everybody goes through midlife crisis, and I went through my quarter life crisis. So when I turned 25, I had that and I was like, I've not achieved anything in my life, that sort of a thing. And that's when I wanted to do something different on stage. I was a theater performer. I started in 2011. In 2014, I was like, three or four years has passed by. What have I done differently? And that is when I started watching movies, and I came across this movie called as Mrs. Doubtfire, where Robin Williams plays this loud and proud drag queen. And I was like, if Robin Williams can do drag, I can do drag too. And that is how the birth of Maya, or Maya Ma, Maya the drag queen, happened. With that, it actually was, it's... when you're coming out, the first thing has to happen is how you come in terms with it. It's first the whole internal, how you are coming terms with it. And then you go to your peers. We never go to our parents first. Because especially Indian parents, they're dramatic. They're overly dramatic. It's very common. Like they can be easily hired by Karan Johar, Dharma Productions, Yash Raj movies, all of that. Yeah. But I went and I started speaking with my friends, friends from the community who I was meeting on a regular basis. And I understood where in my spectrum, where in the queer spectrum or the sexuality spectrum I follow under. And I was a bit confused with the whole drag queen, because a lot of people said, oh, so then you are transitioning into being a transgender, or you're transitioning to be a full-time crossdresser, all of that. But I was like, hey, why do I have to fall into all these brackets? I can just be a performer. I can just be an artist. And to come to terms with all of that, I think it was post my first debut performance, which happened in September 2014. And I was writing this long email, which I've been framing for almost 6 months, because it's almost like I had the skeleton, but I was putting the flesh. I was like, I wanted to have a really great email to say that, hey, Amma and Appa, I am queer man and I'm going to perform as a drag queen. For them, it was like a double-edged sword. And they said, you know, like my mom was like, I don't care about your sexuality, but you should not do drag. And my dad was like, sexuality is a sin, but drag is okay as long as you get paid for it. So I had like opposite points of view, and I thought, you know what, I need to give them time and space. And I'm happy and glad that I didn't live with them in the same city, because they needed time and space from me to understand me. So this is how I came out to them. I think I should move to Yesha now.
Oh, okay. No, so I think, correct me if I'm wrong, the question was what I think of when the word coming out is presented to me. I think of people who I feel comfortable around. And I'm also very well known amongst my friend circle for being very outspoken about a lot of things. So I don't think I shy down from debating people about these things when they say that, you know, this is not natural, or you're too young to know this. I think I have a way to combat both of these responses, which are the most common responses I've gotten from people who are older to me, or even people from my generation who are homophobic. So I think there's a video that my friend sent me a while ago, which basically explains that homosexuality is not just in our species, but it's been around for a very, very long time. If you read Shakespeare very closely, you can see it very present there. And what was the other thing I said? Unnatural?
You're too young to know this.
Yeah, I'm too young to know. if it's okay for Indian parents to talk about getting their kids married, or even joke about, oh my God, this will happen at Isha's wedding when she is, like, you know, however old. If it is okay for them to assume that I'm going to be straight, why isn't it okay for me to know that I'm queer and that I'm bisexual? And I think everyone who's a part of the queer community knows from a very young age that they're a part of the queer community. So I knew from a very young age that I don't think I saw it as an attraction, but I think I crushed on a girl when I was like 5 or 6, and I didn't think it was abnormal for a very, very long time until someone came and introduced these terms into my life, where they said you have to umbrella yourself under this huge label that society has for sexuality, and how sexuality is a spectrum.
So I'm going to go with what Isha said, the whole you know, the unnatural, natural thing. And at the same time, you know, when parents keep thinking, saying that all kids, when they're born straight. Or immediately when they're born, they'll decide, okay, we're going to get him married at this age, and then we're going to build flat for him, we're going to buy a car for all of that. You know, by 25, I started getting that messages from my mom and dad, and it was really scary for me, because I knew heart at heart, like how Isha said, that I am queer, and I don't think so. The moment I had this conversation with my mother, I just told her, listen, I'm ready to get married to a girl, but will you be able to tell her that this is me, that I'm queer? Will you be able to convince her that it's okay, it's normal, it's okay to be like this, you know? So that's when she backed out. She stopped talking about marriage with me. It took a long... So like, you know, thing with parents is it's a lot of unconditioning that you have to do. Like, you have to keep telling them that, you know, this is all your purana, whatever way of thinking. Come to the point this year, this this present. Don't think of the past. Or my past, may no one was like this. That is the first thing they will say. No one in our generation was like this. And I'm like, how can you know what happened behind closed doors? Like, someone could be closeted. Someone could be not open about their sexuality. And it, you know, it's almost like, all I know is this, correct me if I'm wrong, the men of my father's generation are emotionally stunted. They can't easily show emotions for no reason. They can't show emotions. Even if they are showing emotions, they try to shut it down. Like, it's like, oh, main marthu and all of that stuff. That's something which we have to, like I said, we have to keep do unconditioning to our parents for them to understand. Take them, like, it's literally like taking a baby to make them do their first baby steps. The same thing we are doing with the parents when we are coming out and when we are trying to make them understand this, hey, this is who I really am. There's no changes going to happen. Like, my mom called me once and said, oh, so are you going to transition? And I said, oh, are you walking out like this? So she just saw the pictures, right, of me as a drag queen. And she's like, are you going to walk out like this? And I'm like, listen, what I do is I take my drag suitcase and I go to this place I perform and put my makeup and all of that to get ready there. And then when I leave the performance, then I leave without the, I remove my makeup and I leave. Then she was like, oh, that's nice. So you can see how changed. There was a change with way she was reacting to it. So parents need a lot of hand-holding, actually.
You know, Alex, you spoke about the right time to come out. And I want to ask Isha this. I mean, what is the right time to actually be able to tell your friends or your family?
Yeah, okay. So I remember this one time. I'm taller than my mom. I'm 6 inches taller than my mom. I was hugging her. And I said, you're too short for me to hug. I made a joke or something along the lines of that. And she said, when you have a husband, you can make sure he's tall. And I said, what if I want a wife? And she said, no, I have too many problems in life. And I said, excuse me, what does that mean? And she said, it's okay if somebody else is gay, but my children, I don't want that upon them. And I said, why? And she said, it's too unnatural. And I said, it's not though. Like, I can prove to you that it's not. And she said, no, this is just, you're too young to talk about these things. I think this was like 2 years ago. Forget it, move on. And then she yelled at me. And obviously at the end of the day, she's my mom. I'm not going to disrespect her. I will question and I will push her into talking about things that maybe she's not comfortable talking about, but I won't disrespect her. So I said, okay, maybe this is a conversation for another time. And then last year after the lockdown started, I started regular therapy. I had done therapy before that, but it was very inconsistent and wasn't really a good experience for me. And I think like 3 months, 4 months after I'd settled in with my therapist, and after I'd come out to my therapist, and after I'd said that, like, you know, I've really been thinking about coming out to my mom now, because there's no way she doesn't have a clue just because of how much I talk about it. And also because I really don't want to sit at home this Pride Month and do nothing. Because usually if it wasn't the pandemic, I'd be out with my friends and we'd be celebrating. But this month, this year, I had to be at home and I didn't want to not celebrate. And I said, okay, like, that's it. That's the line for me. I can't hide who I am just because we're all cooped up in this house. Because the pandemic had already taken away a huge part of my identity and I wasn't going to let it take away this part too. So I think I called my mom and I said, I need to talk to you. And obviously my heart was racing. And I said, I don't think this is something I ever thought I'd tell you just because of the way you've reacted and all of that. And her first question was, are you pregnant? And I said, no, I'm not. I said, if the opposite exists, the opposite. And I said, I'm not straight. And she said, you're lesbian. And I said, yeah. I said, I'm bisexual. And she said, okay. And I think her reaction was something that really brought my nerves down. Coming out, especially to brown parents, is not easy at all, because as much as you would like to hope for the best, you just have to make sure that what you're getting is not the worst. So what she said to me was that it's okay. Like, over the past few months, I've learned that as long as you're happy, whatever you do is okay. Because I was in a very dark place and she was really scared for me, and all she's ever wanted for me is to be happy. And she said, and I said, no, but you're not okay with it. And then I think she said something that really struck me. She said, I don't think I'll ever be 100% okay with it, but that's not, it's not my thing to not be okay with. It's your thing to decide. Yeah. And in that moment, I was like, no, how can she say that? But then I thought about it and I'm like, I really respect that. I really respect that you said that, because I needed to hear that. I didn't know that it was what I needed to hear, but I did need to hear it. So while it was not like, oh my God, like I'm overwhelmed and I'm so glad that you're gay, it was, it's okay that you're gay. It's not my thing to not be okay with. It's okay that you're gay. And that, I think, is still one of my favorite interactions with her to date.
Wow. When you are coming out to those who are close to you, how do you want them to respond? Like you're saying, Isha, I mean, it's not the worst. And her saying it's okay was good enough. What is the response that you're looking for? And this is for both of you, actually, not just Isha.
Alex, do you want to start?
Yeah. So for me, if you know, the thing is, the first primary person, people that you reach out to is your parents, saying that, okay, so this is me. My mom said one thing, like what happened with Isha happened with me. That's why I resonate with what you said. You know, she said something, whatever you are, whatever you choose to be, I'll still love you because you're my son. And when you hear that, if your child hears this, you know, everything else just crumbles down. Whatever problems that we have faced, all crumbles down. And that is really important to hear from a parent. You know, the moment the parents say stuff like, you know, you are not my son anymore, you are not my daughter anymore, and all of that stuff, it's ridiculous. Like, you know, I mean, then why did you give birth to us?
Yeah.
That's a question. That is another thing that I ask, you know, like, so I've heard stories where the parents of queer, there is a gender fluid person that I know, she was still trying to figure out her life. She's trying to find a standing in her life. And her parents were being really hard on her because they wanted her to be settled down and all that. And she just wanted to take her own time, and they just outrightly disowned her. And mind you, it's not like they are from a lower middle class family or all of that. But this is, they are well known in the society. They are well known painters. And for them to do this, I don't appreciate parents that do that. They need to understand the kid's perspective. The problem here is that parents, when they give birth to a child, they want to see a duplicate version of themselves. Like, oh, I didn't achieve this in my life, so I want my kid to achieve or kid to follow my footsteps. Mm-hmm. And that's when, if a doctor gives birth to a child, you know, wants the child to be a doctor and an engineer, so on and so forth. Now, that's the same case what happened with my parents. Like, they expected me, my mom was in the hospitality industry. She wanted me to get into the hotels. My dad was into marketing and, you know, into journalism. He wanted me to, but I was really surprised that my dad was like, you know, saying stuff like, oh, I don't want you to do marketing or get into journalism. I want you to get into being a CA, a chartered accountant. And I'm like, I'm not interested in being a chartered accountant. So why are you putting that head into my head, you know? So they were all shocked when I chose an alternative career choice, where being an artist, being a drag queen, full-time drag queen, plus being an artist manager, something which they were like, they didn't expect out of me. So And then the next thing, like I'm answering your question, I chose to ignore all these relatives, like those relatives who love to talk or who love to know what is happening in our life. And I really chose to ignore them, block them out of my life, because they are not, they don't care. Honestly, they don't care about my life. Mm-hmm. I chose those friends who are ready to accept me the way I am. I spoke to all my friends, whoever was really connected to me at that point when I came out. I spoke to all of them, but there were those friends who chose to like just distance themselves. They were like, okay, you know, this is a lot to deal with, you know, I'm going to keep a distance. And after that, it was just, you know how it is, right? If friends don't keep a contact with you, then you lose whatever communications that you had or whatever relationship you had. So that's what happened with me. So friends who really stuck with me, they stuck with me. People who distance themselves, they're just chapters of my life.
What I would have to say to the question is how to appropriately react, or what's the right reaction to someone who's coming out to you, is there. I think it's a very personal thing. For me, I haven't come out to anyone except 3 people in my family: my mom, my dad, my aunt. Everyone else, I just test the waters, be with them for a while, and then mention it in a casual conversation. Like, hey, I'm attracted to girls too. So there's no really big moment for me. But my aunt, I think, would be someone to learn from. Her reaction really touched me. So she works in an NGO, and she is a lot like me. She's 2 generations above me, and I'm a version of her. So I came out to her, I think a month or two before I came out to my mom. And she said, I want to say that I still love you, and I want to say that it's okay, but you know all these things. And I think that really hit home. It was that you're not looking at me any differently. Like, if I come out to you right now and if I say, hi, I'm bisexual or I'm queer, and you say, we still love you, that makes it feel like you're loving me regardless of a fault in me. But it's not a fault in me. It's a part of my identity. So what she said really hit home. She said, I love you and you're still the same to me, but I don't see why you would not be. And I think that's something really important that I've noted down, and something very close to my heart.
I would like to add something. So like the thing with you know, meeting relatives at a family function, I don't know if you've met anyone in a family function recently after coming out. So I had to meet them post coming out, and after 6 years, around 6 years or something like that. And this was for my sister's wedding. So you can generally see a person who's uncomfortable with you. They will speak to, like, if you are standing in a semicircle and you have all these cousins and all of that. So one of these uncles come and speak to everybody. But when it comes to that person, and that is me, he just becomes silent. Because that shows how uncomfortable the person is. And I'm like, don't do that. Just be cordial at least. Just be kind to the person so that you don't have to make this an awkward situation. You know, it's just the way how they make you feel, or they feel like they have to put this sort of like a jail spotlight on you. Like, I don't know if Isha's met your other relatives other than your mom, dad and aunt. So just saying that this is what I faced.
I don't think my sexuality or my gender identity translates to my career like it does for you. So obviously it would have been a far bigger situation for you than it is for me. And right now I'm out to only selected members of my family. And the others, I'm out to my cousins and all, obviously, but the others, they know me and they know that I will fight them with everything that they say. So I don't think I'm going to leave them an escape to bully me about my identity. And as for what Alex said, I sometimes the homophobia or the transphobia, it's not verbal, but it's more behavioral. And you can see it. You can see it in the way that they act around you. The same applied with my mom before I came out to her. I think we were out to lunch one day and I called her out. I said, you are homophobic. And she said the worst possible thing. And she said, but I have friends who are gay. And I said,
oh, God.
You don't say that.
You would have been internally screaming, that's not what I meant.
is it fair to make this assumption then that like those who are younger don't always react with the same prejudice that the older generation does?
No, absolutely not. I have a lot of my classmates, not a lot, I would say actually a very few, who, because so many of us are so active politically and socially, are too scared to say these things out loud, but it's so blatantly visible in their actions. And you can't even call them out on their actions because their defense is automatically, I didn't say anything. So these are battles that you fight very like head on, and you have to have like a strong headspace before you go into them. And it's definitely like, while the younger generation is far more accepting because they have a lot more exposure to the internet and to people in general, I don't think it's a complete like washout situation where there's no homophobia within the younger generation at all.
I deal with them like homophobia and transphobia in terms of everybody's scared of me when they see me as a drag queen. So because I am 6 feet tall and I think I can just kick them where it needs to be kicked, so they won't be able to do anything with me. But most of my what I face in terms of homophobia and transphobia is either through social media or through dating apps. Those are the places that I face, and they're just, you know, it's very easy, right? When you just, you're behind social media account, you can just type whatever you feel like, and that just, it's cruel because, you know, you have not done anything to anyone. They just blatantly come to you and just say whatever they want to say and they just leave. And it's something which I've been dealing with for past 6 years, 6 to 7 years, on how to deal with them. It's a mental torture. Sometimes what I do is I don't react to them. I just delete the comment. I don't want to engage with them. That's what I do. Because I'm like, what is the point of engagement? It's like taking all my energy, waste of my energy and my time. So this is something which I face in terms of homophobia and transphobia with the present generation.
You know, Isha also said that, you know, you're constantly like fighting this battle and you're having these hard conversations. And obviously that takes an emotional toll on you. Can you talk a little bit about that?
The emotional toll that it takes on you? I think I don't really separate my battles. I talk very strongly about a lot of things. So whether it be like, you know, patriarchy or homophobia, or even like people who say climate change doesn't exist, all these battles kind of merge into one for me. And it does take up a lot of my headspace. And when people say things like, you know, just don't watch the news or don't engage with these kind of people, I can't not, because I've already seen it and it's already in my head and it's etched there. And it's hurting, because it's hurting to say, like, this is an example, it's not related to the topic, but when the boys' locker room thing happened, I was talking to a classmate of mine who said, why are girls even allowed outside after 8 o'clock? And obviously it really messed with my head, and it like kind of shot me down for the whole week. And a lot of similar battles have had a huge toll on me for a lot of time. I've lost a lot of friends. I think what I can say is to know that you're not wrong. You're not wrong for wanting justice, not only for yourself, but for a lot of other people, not in your city, not in your country, but globally. And you have to find people who think not exactly like you, because that's creating a cult almost, but I mean people who are as liberal as you, and talk to them and share experiences and have conversations. That's the only way out of it. And as much as you can, look at content warnings and trigger warnings, because I've found that those really, really do matter. I really think about, I look at content warnings and trigger warnings and say, am I in the headspace to go into this right now? Is my body in the space to absorb this or watch this right now? And if I say no, I used to feel guilty, but I don't anymore, because it's not like I'm lazy. It's just that I can't at the moment, and I will come back to it sooner or later.
So it's okay to take a step back also.
Yeah, sometimes.
We experienced someone with a YouTuber. I don't know if you've heard of Karim and Minati.
Yeah.
So he I think he was having some sort of a tiff with a TikTok star, and he started using transphobic slurs. And we as a community, we started calling him out, because we were like, you know what, we can't use such blatantly transphobic slurs. And what happened is, we were sharing it, we were telling people report him and all of that stuff. But you know, the thing what happened is, he gained a lot more trans, you know, like, you know, people who don't like trans people, like has his fans. And that just worked against us. You know, we are calling him out, but you know, like, we were like, we wanted people to know this is wrong. That we had like millions of videos from the community saying, you know, don't use such slurs, it's not the right thing to do. But then no, it worked brilliantly for him instead of being against him. But thankfully, we had YouTube take down a lot of his videos where he's been blatantly using words and all of that. But you know, it showed us the ugly side of transphobia, like saying that there are people who enjoy transphobia and who are okay with transphobia existing in the society. So for me, it took a lot of toll on my mental health. I was like, oh my God, I've been working my ass off for 7 years, and it's still, I have still have a lot of things to change. The society is not, there's not much change. And you know, the best part is, the people who's all supported us for our drag performances and all were okay with him using these words, and they were sharing, yeah, bhaiya, aapne to bahut sahi kiya and all of that. My Hindi is bad. But then he's, the way he said that, he did a right job by calling him out. Yes, all of that. And it was a shock to me. I'm like, you fools, you actually supported us. You supported all our LGBT community, and you are supporting a trans, a person who's blatantly using transphobic slurs. So for me, it was like a huge hit during the pandemic, because this all, you know, it's it is during pandemic that people were behind their phones 24/7, and they were able to easily do whatever they feel like. So it took a lot of toll on my mental health. And you know, I'm glad, Isha, you are actually going to therapist and you're talking about your situation. But not everybody in the community does this. They think mental health is some sort of like the equivalent to being mad, you know, that sort of thing. And that's the wrong notion. Everybody, it's almost like how we all go to gym to lose weight. It's almost like we go to therapy to either see if we have any baggage, we have any sort of trauma that we face. So we undo it, or we try to figure a way out with it. So mental health is really important.
Yeah, the way I like to actually think about it is, every year you would get a routine blood test done, you know, just to see if your hemoglobin's fine, your vitamins are fine. Every year, everyone should go to a therapist and just be like,
yeah,
ask the therapist, am I doing fine? Am I okay?
Yeah.
Exactly.
And when you look at it like that, it seems quite normal. Like, it, there's nothing out of place about it. There's a lot that you spoke about, Alex, and I think I also want to discuss whether there is a difference in how homosexuals may be accepted, and you know, it's not the same for bisexuals, or it's not the same for intersex individuals or queer individuals. Do you see that happening?
So, to be honest, of the community that I've seen in India, gay, mostly upper, like I'm bringing caste into this because for the fact that pride is intersectional, anything is intersectional. So caste is very important here. Upper gay cis men always have the upper hand in the pride struggles, and you know, it comes with privilege, it comes with, you know, are able to make contacts, all of that stuff. So I see them, they being the forefronters, they being like, oh, I'm taking this initiative and all of that. But it's the people who do the hard work are the trans women, basically. They are the ones who do the hard work, they do the groundwork, they do all the grassroots level work. They don't want to accept love. They don't want lesbian women to be part of it. They don't want bisexual people to be part of the community. They just want to have, like how Isha said, a cult. Everybody should agree with one person that, okay, this is the thing. You all have to agree with me. And they all be like, yes, 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 yes. So for me, I've seen this is the general way of how the community in India works. It's always this whole power struggles, and at the same time, this all this friction between all the, like, literally, if I don't know if you would agree or disagree with me, I would say the community is fractured at some point. If you look through a magnifying glass, you may see that they are all rosy and glory during Pride Walk and all of that. But if you go through a magnifying glass, you will realize that it is really fractured. Mm-hmm. But then there are times when, like, see, if I go to a party I see there is the sense of belonging between people, then I'm like, okay, I've done some part of it. I brought in a lot of people together. And like, I did a gig in Mumbai in Antisocials. There was a large amount of bisexual lesbian women out there than with gay men. So I felt like there was a sense of belonging there with a cross-dresser, a couple of cross-dressers lining up for the party because they were like, you know what, this is our thing. I mean, so that means there is a sort of safe space that is coming together. Mm-hmm. That is something which is missing in many places in the community, like outreaches area. Like they'd be like, no, I'm the eldest, you have to listen to me. I'm the cult leader, you have to listen to me, and that is the end of the story. Post 2018, what needed to happen was that sex education had to go down strictly to schools, colleges, which didn't happen. And people still think the wrong notions about the community.
Hmm. Isha, you can actually throw some light on this. I mean, if we talk of sex education in schools, is it even happening? And if it is, then is it enough?
Hmm. Yeah, okay. So when I joined my school, I know it's already been mentioned, but I'm not going to mention it to make sure I don't get into trouble. We started off we start school in June, and then in July they said we going to have a third party organization come in and present to you three different presentations. One day it was social power, one day it was career guidance or something, and the third day it was sex and sexuality. Mm. And one day where we reached the class 10 minutes late, and in a year of like 10 months, an academic year of 10 months, is not enough. Mm-hmm. Is not enough. And in that one day, we had to rush through so many things. And we had to, like, a lot of people had to hide their questions just because of the environment that we were doing it in. Like, obviously, there's the boys in our grade who kind of want to sit aside and like make fun of the situation, because to them it's, oh, we already know these things, why do we need to learn it? So it wasn't okay for me to ask as many questions as I would have liked to. And I think that's scary because I don't want to be misinformed. I know a lot of people, like, I don't know if this is an okay, it's probably an okay thing to say, but a lot of my friends up until 10th grade didn't know that women have three holes down there. They, like, how are these things that are not being taught to us from an early age? And I think one thing that someone really brought to light, it was the lady who was giving us the sex ed talk. She said that parents in India are so scared to give their children the sex ed talk that even when they do it, they do it with code words like your flower. And if our parents aren't going to answer these questions for us, if adults aren't going to answer these questions for us, experienced and researched adults, who is? Like, among my friend circle and I, most of the sex ed that we've had through TV shows or we've had through the internet and we've done on our own. And that scares me. What if we didn't have the exposure and the access to the things that we had? I think it's something that needs to change fast and drastically.
So then this sex ed talk that happened in school was also about the act of sex. It was not sensitivity to the gender spectrum, or like, it wasn't about that at all.
There was some part of it that was like, you know, sexuality and the gender spectrum. But there's been no conversation where they've been like, this is the LGBTQ community. You may or may not identify with them. This is the gender spectrum. Gender is a social construct. There's never anyone talking to us about these things because we're too young. I've never understood that. But yeah, these are all things that I think we've learned on our own and never things that have been taught to us like they should be.
The next question is a little more for you, Alex. Can you actually give us a snapshot of LGBTQI issues in the country and where are we headed? We've come a long way and there's still a long way to go.
So starting itself, I said, there's so much of people, I mean, there are a lot of people who think pride is not intersection. It's still in that whole thing about that pride is only colorful. We just go walk in the parade and that's it. What I see happening also is that there are a lot of people joining politics from the community, and that is really required because we have a government which is blatantly passing out laws and all of that about the community without even consulting the community. So that is something which is very wrong at the moment. So I'm glad to see that there is a lot of representation coming from the community, and that is really required so that the conversation does not come to a point where they are making fun of us, but rather they talk about us. So they talk about our rights as a citizen of India. And I see that there is a lot of Dalit queer writers turning up and voicing what they want to say. And because a lot of them have been suppressed for all these years, and they're being given voice at the moment. So there is great stuff happening, and there is a lot of regressive stuff happening at the same time.
You know, the two of you belong to like different generations, I think some 12, 14 years apart. How much have perspectives changed in that time?
So I'm going to start. From what I hear from Isha, I'm glad that there is a generation that's being open towards the community. But I come from a generation where people were clueless about the community. They didn't know anything about the community. They were like, oh, okay, this is what the community is about. And then it was their choice to, you know, learn more about it or not learn more about it. I still have school and college friends that I don't keep in touch with because of the same reason of they are not able to understand where I come from in terms of me being a drag queen and me being a queer cis man. So there is eons difference, but at the same time, there is a lot of, I think we are tied together with the whole, you know, being, we are part of the same community and we, you know, we celebrate ourselves really well, like fully, 200%. So that is what is the connection between us.
Yeah. Most of Alex's generation that I've interacted with has been via family or via internships and work projects and all of that. But these are people who I come across who are very open-hearted. These are the people who I came out to first. Very open-minded is the right word. And they're willing to learn. I think that's what I see is a huge difference between, say, my parents' generation versus Alex's generation and then my generation. There's a willingness to learn and to understand and to be more empathetic towards people and their situations. And I think that's where the perspective difference comes in, where while there's a lot more people who are accepting, or at least pseudo-accepting from my generation, there are people who are still learning from Alex's generation. And I appreciate that. I appreciate people who will come forward and ask me questions with no intention of hurting me, but just purely with the intention of understanding.
That actually brings us to the close of this conversation. If there's anything that you would like to just add, both of you, as closing remarks, please go ahead.
Alex, you can start off.
So, what I would like to say, closing remarks, is that if you are listening to this and you're wondering if you want to come out or you want to, you know, how the community is going to be, we are open-hearted. We are ready to accept you. We are ready to guide you. Don't be afraid, first of all. You know, there are people out there. We all have been to you know, through that whole phase. When you come out, you'll feel that there is this burden that is being lifted out of your shoulders. And that's what matters, because you are able to be yourself and you're able to be comfortable with who you are. So just come out and celebrate yourself with us. Don't worry about what the community thinks about you, what the society thinks about you, and what your family thinks about you. Just be who you are, and that's what matters.
I think what I would like to say is that, like he said, don't be afraid. It's okay to be afraid, but you don't have to be. And I think one thing you have to remind yourself is that nobody has to understand your identity or your form of self-expression to respect it. And that's something I try to remind myself on a daily basis, is that I don't have to understand something to be able to respect it for the sake of somebody else. Yeah, that's all.
My key takeaway is that essentially, like, all the gender norms that we do impose on, I mean, society, they are really learned ideas. And when we talk about natural and unnatural, it's a conversation that we need to, like, move out of now, and really move towards sensitivity and educating ourselves, right? So thank you so much for this lovely conversation. And I know this is going to be valuable to everyone who tunes in.